Hey, Brussels. It's KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. I take calls for a half hour. You can ask questions. You can make suggestions. You can make requests for subjects you like to hear on the air and share information that you have about the matters that we discuss on this program having to do with political assassinations, pollution, covering up of the murders, you name it, of a political nature. That's what I prefer to talk about. We can talk about other things, but I prefer to talk about that. The number here is 375-3082, and you can call in and ask questions for 1/2 hour. That's the format for 1/2 hour, and then World Watchers begins, and then we tape that off the air as I'm talking. I make cassettes, and those are available if you want to get back broadcasts. If you miss a broadcast or want to own one, you can get a copy of it. And I often refer to the sheets or bibliographies that go with these broadcasts. A lot of people send me self-addressed stamped envelopes. Sometimes they'll put a number, like this evening's broadcast, with the number on there. It's 653, and they'll say, I want the sheets from 2 weeks ago or 2 or 3 weeks. A 20-cent stamp will take 4 weeks of broadcast with the bibliography and the source of information that I have on the material that I cover. I didn't do that the first few years I was on the air, and I've been on the air 13 years now, and people would call me all the time at the house. Where did you get your information? Where did that story come from? How did you find those facts? And I found that it was really easier to have a sheet made for myself and for other people, because I forget from 1 week to the next some of the material that I've had on, and the weeks go fast. You look back and it goes very fast. So the sheets are available, and usually on Tuesday or Wednesday at the latest, or I stuff envelopes for people who've sent me. Some people send an envelope, and they wait, you know, 4 or 5 envelopes. It'll carry like 4 months of air shows, and I fill them. Hello?
Yes, hello. I'm calling from Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
And I was just reading the other day a psychoanalytic paper on Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, you know, you talk about the perversions of people like Bloomfield and Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know this before, but this paper brought out the fact that Hitler gained sexual satisfaction by having a young woman.
You mean Bloomingdale, Ronald Reagan's friend with his young mistress.
Right.
Yeah, okay, go on.
Well, the paper states, and I have no reason to believe that it's a rumor, because it's a very scholarly paper. It appeared in the Journal of Interdisciplinary History. It was called the Guilt Feeling, Adolf Hitler's Guilt Feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about his character psychologically, and it brings out the fact that he gained satisfaction, sexual satisfaction, by having a young woman,
mm-hmm.
Much older than his mother,
mm-hmm.
Much younger than his
yeah.
mother, squat over him and it says, quote, urinate or defecate on his head, unquote.
Yeah.
The analyst said that this was his sort of private religion.
Mm-hmm. That's what Vicky Morgan was doing with Alfred Bloomingdale.
Yeah, so I don't know what that has to do with what you're bringing out, but...
It's interesting that they wrote the comparison between
it's too bad that
the Reagan administration and a member of the CIA advisory board and from organized crime and so forth, charged with beating and whipping prostitutes in Vegas is elevated to the White House gala dinners and on the cabinet, really, you know, selecting the cabinet members, yeah.
I thought it was interesting because it sort of brings out the connection from a psychoanalytic point of view between politics and perversion, between leadership and private life, public and private life.
Well,
it had some interesting things to say about Hitler, and it made one think, putting, at least for me, putting together what I know of listening to you reading that. So I just thought I'd bring that out in case anybody wanted to read it. The man's name is Waite, and it's called Adolf Hitler's Guilt Feelings.
White, W-H-I-T-E?
W-A-I-T-E.
W-A-I-T-E.
Yeah, it appeared in 1971 in the Journal of Interdisciplinary History.
Uh-huh.
I thought
how many pages is it?
It's not too long.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because maybe we could get copies of them.
It's about 20 pages.
Yeah, well, maybe sometime I could get a copy of it for you. That's interesting because there's a lot of people in power who have kinky sex that nobody is aware of. A very close friend of mine, Lydia Blades, who passed away this past year, her mother was a photographer in Queen Victoria's Balmoral Castle, one of the first women photographers in the world of that stature. And she grew up hearing stories. Her uncles were killed in the Boer War, and the mother lived on. She passed a few years ago in her 90s, but the woman was very active right up till the time of her death. And they moved from England after Queen Victoria died out to Victorian British Columbia. But Lydia grew up hearing stories of the royal castle and the perversions of all the sex life that her mother would account, and it was nothing like I had ever heard or an American ever even thought about.
Well, it's frightening because one realizes that these people are just an exaggerated version of everybody.
Well, she explains
their sadomasochism, you know, the sadomasochistic relationship between the leader and his people is just really a caricature.
Well, she gave one explanation for it in terms of the British, that the British children were expected to carry on the estates and the heirs and do all the things, you know, to maintain the family lineage. And they were raised by nannies and with no control over what their emotions or feelings were, and then put in boys' schools when they were very young.
Uh-huh.
And by the time they'd been with boys through Oxford and Cambridge and then were in the Navy, they only had access to other men. And that was the origin of so many of the sexual perversions and scandals in England, is that was their only source of contact.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think about the psychoanalytic view of personalities like Hitler? They sort of want to say, in so many words, that really, the havoc and horror and devastation that they create comes from their psychological hang-ups, their sexual psychological hang-ups.
Well, it's a combination. See, I think the public at large has as many hang-ups, and that's why they like people like
right.
Hitler.
Well, that's what I was saying. It's really an extreme version.
They're an extension of us.
Of us. All of
because
us have
when Ronald,
sadomasochistic...
well, enough have it that they put them in an aura. When Reagan was first governor, there was a whole homosexual ring or circle around him, and there's been endless talk about the pedophiles and Henry Kissinger with the little boys and so forth.
I just choked on my wine. I'm sorry.
But you see, people...
A homosexual circle around him?
Oh, yes, up
Ronald
in Sacramento.
Reagan,
really?
The macho cowboy?
Oh, yes. That was a big scandal up in, and there's a whole still circle around people high up in the Republican Party. They're very much involved. Bloomingdale was ahead of it. There's a big homosexual ring and very powerful. He was a party to that at one time in Sacramento. They hushed that up. Mike Kerb, the lieutenant governor, there's reports in the state investigative offices of his relationship. He has a wife and a kid as a front, but there's been whole kinds of reports, lots of reports on Kerb, who someday will be a high official in the Republican Party and was the Brown, working side by side with him in Sacramento. But the thing about these people like, say, Mussolini or Hitler or Kissinger or Reagan is that even if people don't know the details of their life or the sordid part, there's an aura of mystery and authority about them. And to compensate for the no-nos, they come on...
Yeah, well, I think we give that aura to them. That
exactly.
We delegate that power to them.
We delegate that power, and the most brilliant aspect of it that I can quote over and over again is some lines from the play of Vita, when she's sinking and going downhill and dying of cancer, and Che Guevara's leaving, and he says, "Now let's see how you do your final story. You know, how are you going to bow out of this one? Like, your body's collapsing. You had an excuse for everything." And she sings a song, I can't remember verbatim, but paraphrases, and she said that she gave the people what they wanted, and that if she wasn't there, they would be lost, that she was an important thing in their lives. And she said, tell me in 1,000 years, I can't settle poverty or hunger or all the problems in the world. I give them what they want.
I think that's true. One of the interesting studies that's been done, there have been several, but one of the interesting studies on the Manson family said that brought up the fact that, Manson family as a particular instance of a general pattern, and that general pattern is that the leader expiates the guilt feelings of everyone, and he allows anything goes.
Yeah, they live out their fantasies.
They can, give up, everybody in the group can give up their personal repression.
Yeah.
Because the leader says it's okay.
That's right.
And
they get approved.
Away from religious groups or pseudo-religious groups to political groups, to mass psychology.
Yeah.
And there's this interesting dynamic between the leader and the led.
But there's enough people who can identify with a sleazy leader that he represents them.
Yeah. I was thinking of this guru Rajneesh. In India, I had someone tell me that Rajneesh has intercourse with most of his female disciples, and everybody is free to act out their various hang-ups or perversions under his guidance. It's okay. You know, they ritual nudity, ritual sex, and people get free of their hang-ups because of the leader says it's okay.
Yeah, he gives them permission to do it.
Gives them permission to do it, you know, he's a religious leader, but I don't think it's any different from a political leader.
Yeah. In Genet's play, The Balcony, I don't know if you ever saw that. Did you ever see that or read it? They have reruns on television. You remember the whorehouse and the costumes there are the judge and the cardinal and the general.
Right.
And so the plumber and the working man can go in at the end of a day's work and dress up like the general and act out his
Well, you know, the gang, it's really gang psychology, and this paper also brings out the fact that Hitlerism really worked on gang psychology.
It worked at every level. It was totally brilliant.
Yeah, it's interesting. In this country, you know, the gangsters, you know, the intimate relationship between the gangsters in high places and the gangsters in low places, like the Hell's Angels.
And the Mafia, yeah.
Right. They reflect one another.
That's right.
On both ends of the continuum, you know. Anyway, the other, I have a question.
Okay.
The other thing was, I was the one that called and mentioned Robert Jungk's book on Oppenheimer.
Uh-huh.
Not on Oppenheimer, but it was on the development of the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
And I was aware of the fact that in a footnote that Jungk mentioned that the Germans developed these supersonic planes.
Yeah, the flying saucer, yeah.
I'm having a lot of trouble with, from what I understand from you, is that we somehow had these weapons. And the reason I'm having trouble with it, it doesn't really make sense of the arms race. It seems like if we had these weapons all the time, then there wouldn't be any need to stress these atomic weapons.
Well, they may not be capable of carrying what the missile or the atomic, say the MX missile or the warheads in Europe. Those flying saucers may not have the technology. They go very fast, and they also stand still without any noise. They may be used for different purposes, you know?
Yeah, but it seems like, you know, technologically, it would be an evolutionary jump. And all our nuclear arsenal would be obsolete, and I wouldn't know why they would want to.
Well, there's a book out by Valet on the space thing, and he claims that they want to use it for a psychological thing later. In fact, they were going to use flying saucers and have them land over in Cuba and prepare them and tell them it's from another planet and Jesus has resurrected because they're all Catholic, and that they want to use it for psychological warfare later.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's other reasons. Okay, well, listen, thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, this is Mae Bressel, and it's 375-3082. I do want to mention that the movie Mephisto is going to be playing on the Monterey Peninsula. I don't know how many of my listeners here have seen this movie. It's going to be over at the Monterey Institute on Van Buren on June the 15th, 16th, and 17th. This is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evening at 8:15. That is one of the best movies I've ever seen. It is absolutely marvelous. German movie with subtitles, and Mephisto is the story of a man, an actor in Europe, taken after the story of Faust, who literally sells himself to the devil and gives in to the wishes of Hitler and the Nazis bit by bit in order to work his way up in the system. Hello?
Hi, May.
Yeah, hi.
In response to the previous caller,
yeah.
Jacques Vallée's book is called The Messengers of Deception.
Yeah. And he talks about them using as weapons.
Right, and the psychological impact of these things is pretty obvious. You have occult bookstores literally jam-packed full of books that are trying to suggest that disc-shaped aircraft are from
another planet.
Uh-huh. Preparing great chunks of people. I mean, there's lots of people who prefer to believe that mm-hmm. fairy tale, so that there will come a day, and I think this summer we're going to see a lot of that kind of phenomenon to start bracing the people for this sort of scenario.
Yeah, for the mystery. When people caught on that we were making these flying saucers, when there was a whole series of cattle mutilations in Arizona and in Texas, and I began getting a newsletter on animal mutilations, and I have files of all kinds of it, and the common denominator was these aircraft that hovered over and nobody could hear them. And there were human footprints, but they were silent. They were made by a youth organization. And the conclusion of the various people, they could trace them to a place up in Northern California where they were seen quite frequently, and also the Air Force Base in Colorado, I believe it was. And as soon as these studies began to seriously trace these things and say, hey, what's going on? And the tongues were cut out of the cows and the genitals cut off and all this symbolic stuff, intestines removed, the blood drained, not a trace of blood. As soon as these studies began going, the mutilation stopped. Hmm. And, you know, I can almost date the last time there was a mutilation reported by, I've saved all that stuff under animal deaths and filed it away. And the reports of the people trying to find out. If you want to find out who killed Kennedy, you can find out. If you want to know who did the animal mutilations, you can find out. So all of a sudden, there haven't been a rash of mutilations, I bet, in 2 years. When they traced them to military bases and to Northern California.
Yeah, well, it's good to keep on keeping on these guys.
Oh, sure, because it really scares them. I remember one night there was a story of flying saucers and up over the Los Laureles grade, and cows were, I don't know if the cows died or not, but there was a death of a lot of sheep or animals out near Fort Ord. You remember that? There's a whole lot of animals, and it was the same time as the sightings, and somebody who listens to these broadcasts worked at Spreckles at night and saw these flashes of these ships. I saw one twice, and they're not from other planets.
Well, not especially when you take into consideration this secret research that the Germans were heavily involved in.
That's right. I was once driving down from San Francisco at night. It was like 1 in the morning, just past Watsonville or San Juan Bautista coming this way, and I was with a friend, and we looked him back, and this friend said, there's a green light in the back of his headlights, you know, like a green light. And I looked, and there were these green lights on this thing, and then all of a sudden it went straight up in the air. I couldn't see anything except the lights. And they went up, and then I read the next morning about other people seeing green lights in these kind of spaceships. It gets you a little disconcerted, and there were rashes of them where people were seeing it, and then all of a sudden that disappeared, and they haven't been seen around here for a couple of years.
Apparently, they're also working on the Delta-shaped craft, and there's been quite a controversy around why, because we had Delta-shaped, you know, a flying wing-shaped
uh-huh.
craft, and why we didn't continue that. And it's, in my opinion, it's because if we can build a triangular-shaped craft, which we did back in the late 40s and early 50s, if we can do that, then we can certainly build a disc-shaped craft,
oh.
And they don't want people to realize that, yeah, we can do triangle shapes, and we can do disc shapes. And
there's been lawsuits to open up the archives and the reports on the saucers and UFOs, and you get nowhere. The government has absolute control, and there's absolutely no reason to lock it up unless they exist and are man-made, because they would tell you, hey, when this comes, this is what you do, or this is what we think. This is one of the most closely guarded secrets in the United States.
Yeah, and they're going to very soon, I believe, come down
Hello. The phone got hung up.
Okay. Maybe his elbow hung at the phone. But anyway, this is a project that was started by the Germans and taken over by the Americans who brought Nazi scientists to this country. So,
hello?
It's just me again.
Your elbow hit the phone?
No, my little two-year-old hit the phone.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You probably saw, not to change the subject, but you probably already saw how that they're saying Pope John Paul was poisoned.
Oh, I got the book today.
Good.
I will tell you about it. Yeah. Yes, it's available now, and it's a brilliant book. I got the book today. I heard about it, and the London Times had it, and I was talking to people in New York yesterday, like, how are we going to get this book? It's in London. And I got a call today from somebody that said, I've got a book for you.
Fantastic.
Isn't that, you know, that's the fun of doing this program and meeting different people who are alert to the things you need or want, you know? And I thought it would take me months to get the book. It just was on the news and CNN. It's on the murder of John Paul I. It's about, you know, I have a section called Vatican Deaths, and I'll do more of it on World Watchers. And I keep looking at these people that are murdered one after the other, and I think, hey, what's wrong with me? You know, I mean, are they killing these people like with fly swatters, you know? And then I know more truly that there are death squads in this country, too, because if the CIA puts them in every other country. And I'll do more on some deaths this week. And if the Vatican in front of public eye can just murder one person after the other, this book is a moving obituary, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
Wait till you see it.
And this other book you probably already have, God's Banker.
I don't have that one yet.
Rupert Cornwell.
No, I don't have
that. I found that in the Monterey Library.
Yeah, I don't have that yet. But and if somebody called me and said, I have this book, so that's how I happened to get this one. But I have to get God's Banker, too, on Calvi. But this book tells it all. I mean, this looks like a really good book. So, yeah, we'll talk more about
right.
that, and people
I'll
can get
go.
That. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite subjects, that 33-day Pope that was off. I used to do a lot of radio shows up at KGO, and Bob Trevor was taken off the air because I talked about the Vatican.
Hello?
Hi, May.
Hi.
I'm calling from Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz, okay.
And I wanted to talk about something that appeared in the City on the Hill Press.
Okay.
You see that?
No, not unless somebody sends it to me. They used to give me a subscription. What's in it?
Well, apparently, I didn't get to see a copy of this, but a flyer appeared last Friday all around Santa Cruz. It was put out by this guy, Gary Richard Arnold.
Oh, yeah. I read about him in the Washington Post. He's still hanging around, huh?
Yeah, he's in Santa Cruz, and
yeah.
He put out this flyer that he said he put together with the help of the Independent Majority Political Action Committee, IMPAC, down in Southern California.
Yeah.
And it was this whole flyer about Marxism and communism, enlisting people in business and in Santa Cruz, and he brought in Reagan, and he brought in the Sierra Club, and just everybody.
They're just too, Reagan's too liberal for him.
Well, what did he say about Reagan? I don't remember.
Oh, he says Reagan's got to go, you know. He's too liberal. I have the quotations at home, yeah.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because there's an article here, and they started talking to the guy and finding out what the whole thing was about, and he kind of spilled some information here that's interesting. He mentions Western goals.
What did he say?
He said that there's a group up on campus at UCSC. It's the UCSC Conservative and Moderate Political Action Political Union of Students called Campus. And he says that they helped him with a lot of the information. He says IMPAC cites Campus as a local contact for films from the ultra-conservative Western Goals Foundation.
He uses them?
Apparently he gets a lot of things from them.
Oh, yeah, you know, there's the cable network in New York, and they have the Western Goals movies all the time.
Is that right?
Yes.
But then the campus chairperson denied all that.
Yeah.
And said he has no contact with Western Goals. But what's interesting is they asked him what he was up to, this Gary Richard Arnold.
Uh-huh.
And he said he'd just come back from Orange County, where he'd been working to encourage the defection of Olympic athletes from communist countries.
Oh, no.
He said he's been active in defection program, he said, setting up safe houses, translators, and signs along strategic routes. He was setting up signs on these.
Get me a copy of that.
Okay,
I've got to have that. Oh, yeah, he was denouncing George Bush, the former director of the CIA, because the quotation in the Washington Post is that Bush said that the Soviet uniforms in a particular parade were very impressive. Bush went back there for two funerals, you know,
right.
And he said the uniforms were impressive, and that makes him a commie simp lover.
Right.
So that makes Bush, you know, too left. I mean, he's too a marshmallow, right?
Right.
I mean, with all the death squads and the Dobasons and everybody else, but if you say, I like that uniform.
That's it.
He may have meant like Richard Nixon had the uniforms, those old comic opera German uniforms.
Yeah.
Maybe Bush meant, he may have been saying, let's copy them. But anyway, that was his example of how far left Bush has gone.
My gosh.
Well, I hope he has a whole bunch of people. Let's encourage him, because then everyone that defects will be a vote against Reagan. You know, they use us to divide and conquer. I hope he has about 5,000 votes less, you know?
Right. Well, he goes on. He says he termed the group's work as tremendous success in encouraging the Soviet bloc boycott. But then he goes on to say, well, we still may go after the Red Chinese and other red bloc countries.
You know, this poor Oberoth, who's the head of the Olympic Committee, he goes down, he's the worst racist, he's the worst funk. I mean, this guy is so bad, okay, Oberoth? And in his desperation, he goes down in his humiliation suit to beg Castro to come to the Olympics, because
right.
What will the Alpha 66, the Omega 7, and all the anti-Castro Cubans do if there's no Cubans, right?
Right.
So, I mean, you got to have a party. What if nobody comes? So he goes down and says, oh, please, Fidel, you know, don't you want to come to the Olympics? And Fidel said, no.
We need some fireworks. There's not going to be anything going on.
And, well, I mean, well, you can, whether you can, okay, there's some Romanians coming. They can get them.
Right.
But that's why they're coming, because they probably want it. They're probably the Iron Guard of Trifi and von Bolshevik, and they've probably been running their ass off for the last 8 years to get here so that they can defect. So there'll be a big hunk of Romanians defecting, because the whole head of the Iron Guard works for the CIA.
Well, if they defect, I'm sure this guy will bring them in.
Great. I just read about a guy from Czechoslovakia that defected because when the Russians were in Czechoslovakia, he thought it was so terrible. So he defected and moved to Chicago, and he had two sons and a wife, and the second son was just murdered in a gang thing in the streets of Chicago this week. And the first son was killed, and the second one was killed. And he was one of the top athletes in Czechoslovakia, and he had defected and come to this country a few years ago. And the paper said today, I just read the morning paper, he said, I should have stayed home. The gangs were so bad in Chicago. The
right.
Poor Czech kids, they don't speak Chicagoese, you know.
No, far from it.
If they don't get into dope dealing and the mob, you know, off with their heads. So he got a little taste of America. He says, now the house is empty.
You know, speaking of athletics, I was thinking about you the other day. I was watching a gymnastics meet. I guess it was the Olympic trials or the world something. It was happening somewhere in the United States.
Yeah.
And all the girls, the young girls that were winning,
uh-huh.
were from Houston.
Oh, yeah, that's where the trainer is.
Right, you mentioned him one time.
Yeah, Kamenichi.
Right, and they showed him on TV, and he was speaking with, you know, an accent. He was.
Yeah.
So that's him.
He's gonna try and show Americans, you know, with their white bread and all that, and their Twinkies can do it too.
Right.
Listen, if you give them $1,000 a week and whip their ass, they'll do it.
That's right.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Go get me the paper. Get me the City on the Hill. Send it to me.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks a million.
Okay. Bye bye.
Oh, I have to see that Mr. Arnold up there is helping the defection. I mean, they locked. Of nerve it takes to ask these people to move to this country when you don't know what they're going to get into or what's in store for them, except that this is America the Great, and it is great, but how hard to tell them to come here and then get in, as I say, into the street gangs and into the scene and melt into America at this time when we're really going through some cataclysmic changes of our own. You know, it's pretty hard to invite somebody into this place. I think it is, but... So Mr. Arnold's up at that level. That's cute. I hope he has some luck. It's okay. Our time is up now. I've just got 1 minute, so I can't take any more calls. We'll switch to World Watcher. And next week, I did spend a long time, 15 minutes on that call. I'll take it shorter in case you want to call in. Sometimes I like to talk at length and get a certain point of view across. And maybe it's just a half hour. I shouldn't be spending so much time. So next week I'll do it a little faster, and we'll limit it maybe to 2 or 3 minutes. And if there aren't calls every 2 minutes, we can speak at length and do a little more and share some ideas. I can't wait to see the City on the Hill article. That's interesting, and even mentioning Western goals.